all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, April 17th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us. We're glad you could be here. We got all sorts of stuff to get to and a full studio to bring it to you. All sorts of folks joining us here. Of course, Ganja John sitting in on camera, too. How you doing, John?
What's up, Mr. Russ? How are you?
I'm having myself a good time, especially on the internet lately, but we'll talk about that in an hour, too.
Oh, I can't wait.
We got Wiz Calico hanging out on camera, three. How you doing, Calico?
Aloha, quite well. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. And of course, Todd Armstrong is in today for Todd's Toker Topics.
Hello.
What do we got for a topic today, Todd?
Quality of product.
Quality of product. Yes. Oh, and I assume the products that we enjoy.
Yes, / capitalism.
Far out. Also from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, we have our senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hello, Wes.
It is going very well. So glad to speak to you. And we just want to find out what the latest headlines are that we'll get to right after this first break.
You bet. We're going to talk about a couple of bills from California. One of our favorite assemblymen is pushing a new bill to regulate medical marijuana in California. Also, we're going to talk about that endorsement or not endorsement. We're going to talk about what the Democrats are saying about Amendment 64 in Colorado. And also, first up, we're going to talk about the Prime Minister of Canada saying some very surprising remarks during that Latin American summit this weekend.
Yeah, we're getting all sorts of great news out of this Latin American summit. Coming up after we do the hemp headlines with Cannabis Carrie, we'll get our daily toker tune for today, and it is Electric Tuesday. I'm going to bring back a dance tune that I really enjoy from Wallpaper called I Got Soul, I'm So Wasted. Then at half past, we're going to take a look at that summit of the Americas. It took place in Cartagena, Colombia, excuse me. And I have some video from the Hardball with Chris Matthews show. First of all, Chris Matthews asked a very pointed question to President Obama there at the summit of the Americas. And I want to bring you President Obama's reaction to that question. Then we're going to go to Todd's Toker Topic. And after the Toker Topic, we're going to get right back into the summit there in Colombia with a look at Obama's just now released 2012 National Drug Control Strategy. It's their annual document that lists out their budget priorities and what they're going to do to try to reduce the demand and supply of drugs in America. Got all sorts of shady math going on in there that I got to tell you about. Plus, we'll take it into Toker Talk Radio in hour two. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. And, well, that's it. We're going to have ourselves a good time. So stick around. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. My job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. WeedMaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. WeedMaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit WeedMaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network.
How's it, everyone? This is Yee from Pepper, and you're listening to The Normal Show Live.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to Elliot Beats.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Conservative leader and Prime Minister of Canada Stephen Harper was in Colombia this weekend attending that conference on all things Latin America. Harper conceded a few things during the weekend in statements he made to journalists. For one, he said he was in disagreement over the British rule of the Falkland Islands, and he also disagreed that Cuba should not have been excluded in the conference. But after listening to 2 days of Latin American leaders going over just how costly and bloody the war on drugs has become south of the United States borders, the man who has ratcheted up the drug war in his own country seemed to soften his stance. Stephen Harper's Canadian administration has increased drug penalties, has pushed for mandatory minimums in drug crimes, and has worked to restrict Canada's medical marijuana program. So a softened stance was quite a surprise to the Canadian cannabis community. Harper met with Canadian journalists who were in Colombia covering the summit on Sunday night, and he told them that he believes that there is more agreement about the drug policy, even though the answers were not so clear-cut. He told them, quote, "What I think everybody believes is that the current approach is not working, but it is not clear what we should do," unquote. Now, those are rather soft words, and they don't seem too newsworthy. Coming from Stephen Harper, activists can only hope that the prime minister was moved by the escalating violence that surrounds Latin America's black market drug trade that feeds U.S. and Canadian appetites. When pushed for more information, Harper only said that, quote, "Drugs are illegal because they quickly and totally, well, with many drugs," he clarified, "destroy people's lives." Maybe attending the conference, he might now see the difference between destroying someone's life because they chose to do something that is harmful to them, or destroying people's lives because drug gangs will murder innocent civilians in their pursuit to control by fear in local communities.
Well, good news there from the Great White North. Stephen Harper finally coming out with some sort of hedging comments on support for at least doing something different. Although we don't see much difference from what he's doing up in Canada there, fighting for that S-10 bill, fighting for mandatory minimums as he has, trying to institute all of the worst aspects of American drug war policy from the 1980s. That's what you're getting from Stephen Harper. But I really think this Summit of the Americas and this continued pressure from the Latin American leaders whose countries are being torn apart by the drug war is beginning to have an effect in North America. We can see the discomfort, and you'll see it later on the show here, that President Obama has trying to answer any of these drug war questions regarding the ideas of legalization in the United States or in Canada for that matter. He has a lot of trouble dealing with that question and dances all the way around it. It looks like Stephen Harper's starting to feel some of that pressure as well. When he hedges his bet by saying drugs cause problems, most drugs cause problems, he's recognizing what we all recognize is that this is two separate issues. There is an issue of the drug problem. There is an issue of people that have addictions to serious hardcore narcotics and other drugs. And then there's the issue of marijuana being prohibited, which is a completely separate issue. And whenever we bring up this legalization of drugs, you're going to find that these prohibitionists, these people that are clinging to the way that we're currently doing things, are always going to say drugs. They're never going to say marijuana. They're never going to say we ought to contemplate or talk about a debate on the legalization of marijuana. They'll always say something like we need to debate the legalization of drugs. They've got to lump drugs in with marijuana because now more people than not in the United States of America and in Canada support the legalization of marijuana as a way of dealing with all of these, any of the problems that you might have associated with the trafficking of marijuana, the increase of gangs that are trafficking it throughout the United States. We have 300 different cities in the United States where there is a significant Mexican drug trafficking organization involved with the trafficking of all drugs through those cities. That we have the growth of marijuana international forests in our public lands. These are the problems of drug prohibition that now a majority of Americans and Canadians think ought to be solved through a regulated tax licensed system of distribution of marijuana instead of this continued prohibition. It is going to continue to get tougher and tougher for these politicians to stand for the same old drug war nonsense.
And a big coup for the legalization effort in Colorado. We've been watching Amendment 64 in the state of Colorado. It's seeking to legalize and regulate marijuana just like alcohol. Last month, a majority of those that attended the Colorado Republican Assembly backed Amendment 64. Now, it's not usually the Republicans that support legalization measures, but in March, the Colorado Republicans voted by 56% to support the legalization effort. Now, it was a majority, but not the two-thirds of a majority that it takes to become part of the party's 2012 platform. The Republicans of Colorado did declare that medical marijuana is a 10th Amendment issue and should be left to the states to determine the rules and regulation. Now, with a majority of Republicans on board, we were waiting for the Democrats of Colorado to have their assembly and find out if they also favored the amendment. The Colorado Democrat Party held their state assembly this weekend in Pueblo. They did show even more enthusiasm this weekend, but not really that much more. Democrats voted to support Amendment 64 by about 60%. The Democrats have come out by a majority to support the measure, a step just shy of a formal endorsement. According to Matt Enzio, communications director for the Colorado Democratic Party, a formal endorsement can only come from the state's central committee, not the state convention and assembly that took place this weekend. Now, he made that statement today after many media outlets reported that the state Democrats had endorsed the measure. Many Democrats did seem positive about the legalization amendment. Cindy Lowry Graver, the Democratic Party chair, said that this has become a mainstream issue. 15 counties in Colorado have adopted resolutions that support the regulation of legal marijuana, including 8 of the 10 largest counties in Colorado. The support coming from both parties, and more the polls are indicating that the idea of legalizing cannabis is catching on across all demographics.
Absolutely. And again, President Obama is going to be in a tough political situation in the state of Colorado, where he had his Democratic nomination in 2008. The state has become a solidly green state with respect to support for medical marijuana and legalization. When you've got the Republican Party of Colorado at a 56% majority supporting legalization, outright legalization, right? And when you've got them supporting medical marijuana, saying it's a 10th Amendment issue, and that's happening on the right side of the aisle. And then on the left side of the aisle, you got the Democrats coming out 60% in support for a legalization amendment and clearly in support of medical marijuana. You find yourself in a state where everywhere you look, every political persuasion, there is a majority support for legalization. Now, President Obama needs Colorado. It's part of his Western path to the nomination. In the Electoral College, he's got to gather up so many electoral votes. And while he can count on heavyweight states like California to provide a bulk of his electoral votes needed for the winning of the presidential election, he's got to have some swing states to make this happen. He can't get a majority just on the solidly blue states. One of those swing states is Colorado. Another one of those swing states is New Mexico. The Washington and Oregon, which are strong medical marijuana states, lean Democratic, but they can be moved slightly. So this is going to become a more intense political issue. And the last people who are going to come around on it are the people at the top ends of the political food chain. We can see now that the rank-and-file Democrats, the rank-and-file Republicans, people at the committee levels now are starting to openly support legalization. Now, they had said it behind closed doors before, but now they're openly supporting it. They're putting pressure on their committees. They're putting pressure on their party chairs. They're putting pressure on the higher office elected officials to have to pay attention to this issue. It's thanks to people like you who keep calling in, who keep making this issue important, who keep writing to the letters to the editor. And if we keep building from the ground up, it can be like what the Republicans did in the 60s when they built up after the demise of Goldwater and started taking over local politics. This can happen. Don't get discouraged.
And we want to report to you about a bill in California that was written to try and bring some order to the medical marijuana economy in the state. Assembly Bill 2312 is set to make it easier to open a medical marijuana business in California and would shift the regulation of the industry from the local governments on to be a burden of the state government. In California, some local governments have banned dispensaries and the rules change from county to county and often town to town. The measure would make statewide rules to cut through the red tape of municipalities and put everyone on a level playing field. The proposal would create a board of medical marijuana enforcement, and they would adopt rules and regulations. They'd set the fees and the guidelines for medical marijuana cultivation and sales, and those rules would apply statewide. They would require no fewer than one medical marijuana dispensary to be allowed per 50,000 residents. And the bill is authored by longtime proponent of sensible cannabis regulation, Tom Amiano. He's also the head of the Public Safety Committee, where the bill took its first step today. Before a vote before his committee, he said that statewide rules are needed because of the harassment by law enforcement in some areas of the state, even though the voters of California legalized medical marijuana over 15 years ago. The committee also heard objections from some city and state law enforcement agencies that said the measure would unreasonably tie their hands. The League of California Cities and the California Police Chief Associations oppose the bill in part because they say it would take control over the dispensaries and clinics away from the cities and the counties. The Police Chief Association Government Relations Manager, John Lovell, said that the measure said about the measure, quote, "It forecloses the ability of local government to take control over their own destiny." So, but even with those objections, the committee passed the measure by a 4-2 vote, with two Republican members of the committee opposed. Assemblyman Stephen Knight, one of the Republicans that voted against the measure, said it puts local law enforcement at odds with federal law, which still prohibits the sale of marijuana, reminding the committee before casting his vote that selling and possessing marijuana is still an illegal activity. Amiano told the committee that it would be the worst public policy choice for California to sit idly by doing nothing and let the failed war on medical cannabis continue unchecked. He also told the committee that the point of regulation is to bring these activities above board to guarantee safe and effective access with clear rules for those involved in the industry. Now, that bill has been sent to a second committee, and if they pass the measure, it will reach the Assembly floor.
Yeah, this is desperately needed in California. You know, being the first medical marijuana state and being the only state to have language as broad and vague as Prop 215 is, they've got a unique set of circumstances to have to deal with. Imagine that, though. I mean, if you're in another state and you don't know very much about what's going on with California, imagine the difficulty involved with not knowing what the law is from county to county, city to city, jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And when you go to look up what the law might be, what the case law might be, you can find appeals court decisions setting precedent in completely different ways. One will say, yes, you can. The other one will say, no, you can't. And so it makes it impossible for the people who do want to try to follow the rules and want to be compassionate and help people out and are doing this for all the right reasons. It makes it a lot tougher for them, but it doesn't make it any tougher for the people that are unscrupulous, that are just in it for the buck, that are in it for the green rush, that just want to, you know, get that, you know, $15 a gram off of patients. Doesn't hurt them at all. They weren't that concerned about following regulations in the first place. It's very important that we get some sort of standardized regulation statewide all throughout California, so these entrepreneurs that are trying to open these businesses and these patients that are trying to patronize these businesses can know what the rules are. I mean, imagine if religion we were talking about. In some cities, it was illegal to build a Protestant church. In other cities, you could only build Catholic churches. In some cities, they could only be certain size. In other cities, you could be prosecuted if you went to church. I mean, to have that kind of stuff going on, city to state, is just inviting chaos. And that's a lot of what we've seen in medical marijuana in California. Thanks, Carrie, for the news updates. Couple updates on our schedule. I wanted to let folks know about the upcoming Aspen Legal Seminar. Takes place May 31st through June 2nd at the Gantt Resort in Aspen, Colorado. You can check out normal.org for more information to book your rooms and to get up there to Aspen. It's a wonderful seminar, open to the public. It's very intense on the law and how medical cannabis business law works and so forth, but it is in a manner that the general public can understand it and gain a whole lot from it. So lawyers, you can also get continuing legal education credits for attending. Also, this Thursday, there will be no show, either this show or Toker Talk Radio. I'll be on an airplane flying to San Antonio to bring you live coverage of 420 from San Antonio, Texas. So check it out, and we'll see you there.
Hey, Russ, what do you think about a Jack Harrer break?
Oh, we have a Jack Harrer today?
Yeah, I got Jack Harrer in my pocket right now.
Oh, well, you better let him out. He'll probably suffocate.
He might.
Be right back.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Counter computer.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you Tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, getting real busy here at Rolla J Studios as we get ready for 3 weeks of travel. I actually counted it up. I will be on 14 different planes in 18 days. So it's going to be quite a bit of travel. And with that, I got a little behind on today. And so I didn't pick out a new Electric Tuesday tune. Got one of the ones from the archives that I really like. And we'll get to it in just a second. Just a quick rundown of the schedule. Again, the 19th on Thursday, we'll have no show. Friday, we'll have our 420 show from San Antonio. Saturday and Sunday, we'll bring you coverage from the Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver. On Monday, there will be no show. Tuesday, I'll be back to do shows, including A Different View, which will be on Tuesday night. Wednesday, flying back out to Tucson, Arizona to cover the Patients Out of Time conference. We'll bring you live coverage from that as well, right here at live.normal.org. And the following weekend, Cinco de Mota, I will be in Dallas, Texas, with their celebration there. Be driving the 420 Truth Enforcement Vehicle and hanging out with Dean Schwag and Professor Blunston, I'm sure. So check that out. For more information, you can check our normal Google Calendar, which you can find at the Normal Audio Video Department, normal.org/AV. All right, enough of that. Let's get to the music, get a little fun here. This is Wallpaper with I Got Soul.
You wanna go to a party tonight? It's supposed
I'm so
to be
wasted.
The jam. It's supposed to be really nice. We'll take a bus or a taxi cab. We can get faded, then go to the club. I said, whoa. Red wine, cheap champagne, it tickles down my spine. I gotta say I'm looking good. I'd hit on myself if I could. I say, whoa, whoa, whoa. I could use another round, so I could relax on now. I got so, so wasted.
Alternative Medical Choices offers healthcare the way it should be. Easy to access, patient-centered, team-based, and quality-focused. We offer a variety of natural, affordable healthcare treatment options like primary care, group acupuncture, massage, and assistance with OMP registration. As a patient, you will have a team of experts working with you to make you the best you can be. Call Alternative Medical Choices at 503-288-5579 or check us out on the web at altmedchoices.com.
Fishbone pulled up there. We pulled up today in the van, and I walked out of the building, walked through the big building over there. I walked outside, and I'm walking over by the lake, and I just see everybody casually smoking weed like it's all right. Like it's supposed to be like that.
Because it is all right.
Like you ain't got to worry about no police coming and asking you what you're smoking or what are you doing here, or let me see your driver's license. See, that's how they do it in Amsterdam. Everybody just out there chilling. Ain't nobody stressing. You go buy your weed at the shop. You go kick it, smoke your weed, walk the street, do whatever you want to, and you don't even get arrested.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that, but finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Narnal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm gonna blow waves of hope on my head. I'm gonna leave this plastic place to your plastic jubilees. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place instead.
Catch Normal News with Cannabis Carry every weekday on Normal Show Live at 7 p.m. Eastern here on the Normal Network. Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's just 31 after the hour here, and I wanted to bring you some video from MSNBC's Hardball program with Chris Matthews, because it hearkens the return of one of our favorite prohibitionists.
Drugs are bad.
Well,
you shouldn't
no,
do drugs.
not Mr. Mackey.
If you do them, you're bad. Because drugs are bad.
Although,
okay.
Although he's a little bit like Mr. Mackey in what he has to say. No, it's our friend Dr. Kevin Sabet, PhD, who I recently debated at the Baker Institute. There was the Hardball segment was focusing mostly on the summit at Cartagena, Colombia, the summit of the Americas, and went on to after showing the clip of Chris Matthews interviewing President Obama. It then went on to have a debate, basically a panel, you know, two talking heads of Dr. Kevin Sabet here and Ethan Nadelman from the Drug Policy Alliance. So I just want to play some of this, and we'll pause it in between to give you some of my reactions to, once again, Dr. Sabet's typical lines here.
In our healthcare system, already illegal drugs cost us $200 billion in terms of lost social costs, and our legal drugs, alcohol and tobacco, cost $400 billion of social costs, and we only get about $35 billion in revenue. So, you know, the
It's just amazing. He keeps coming back to that. It was the first thing that I debunked when I went on with him out there in Texas. But it's this continued misdirection by the drug warriors. They'll continue to tell you, well, alcohol and tobacco cost society $400 billion, and they only bring in $35 billion in taxes. Oh, okay. That's really scary if we're talking about legalizing alcohol and tobacco. But we're not. We're talking about legalizing cannabis. The reason alcohol and tobacco cost society $400 billion a year is because they're toxic and addictive. Let's say this again. Toxic and addictive. Alcohol and tobacco kill people and addict them, unlike cannabis. And that's why when we look at the social health costs of what it would cost for society to deal with a marijuana user, we actually have some numbers we can plug into that equation. Because it's always interesting how Sabet and the drug warriors always like to point out how much alcohol and tobacco cost us without ever telling us how much cannabis costs us. Because people are smoking pot now. If there is a cost, we should be able to measure it. And whatever that cost might be, set the taxes to that level. I mean, you're saying that alcohol and tobacco taxes only bring in $35 billion. Well, if they were illegal, they'd bring in zero, wouldn't they? Which is what we're bringing in marijuana taxes. Zero. Wouldn't some tax revenue be better than zero? And when we actually take a look at the costs associated with cannabis consumers, we find that a cannabis consumer costs society 8 times more than an alcohol drinker and 40 times more than a tobacco smoker. So using the numbers from alcohol and tobacco to try to scare us doesn't really scare us, because we're not talking about alcohol and tobacco.
Numbers don't add up for legalization. We also wouldn't be crippling the cartels if we legalized drugs. And that's because these cartels are dealing with guns, human trafficking, piracy, on and on. And it would be a small dent in their overall balance sheets. And we'd be...
So let's not dent them. Don't you love this line of reasoning? See, they set up this straw man. Kevin Sabet likes to set up this straw man to say, well, the drug legalizers are saying that if we legalize pot, it would cripple the cartels. But it wouldn't cripple the cartels, so let's not legalize pot. Well, I guess it depends on what cripple means, right? There's some estimates that went as high as 60% of the Mexican drug cartels based on marijuana trafficking. Some estimates went as low as 15%. When Prop 19 was going in 2010 in California, the estimate was it would affect 2% of the Mexican cartels' income. Why do we give them any income? I mean, this is exactly the point we're trying to make, is let's turn over that 60% or 15% or 2% or whatever it is. Let's turn that over to law-abiding American farmers, law-abiding American dispensaries, and law-abiding American consumers, rather than giving a price support and a market subsidy to torturers and thugs and murderers.
Instead, creating addicts here and abroad.
Why do I hear when I was down there this week? I'm no expert. I was down there this weekend listening to people like Santos, yeah. The very impressive president of Colombia, and the others. They seem to think that what's going on up here, the vast consumption of illegal drugs up here, is killing those countries down there with weapons, with murder, with horror, and corruption. How do we respond to that by saying, oh, we'll keep going the way we're going? We're going to keep fighting the so-called war on drugs.
Well,
Chris Matthews, one of my favorite guys, just nails it. It's like, how do you turn to the president of Mexico when his country has seen 50,000 killed over this drug war? How do you turn to the president of Guatemala, who's seen 40% of his country being taken over by narco-terrorism? How do you turn to those guys and say, well, you know, we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing. Don't worry, we'll get it right. It's going to work eventually. You'll see. Now, Kevin Sabet knows this. He's not a dummy. He understands that the public opinion has turned against this concept of war on drugs and has understood that it just cannot work. So Kevin's little trick of misdirection here is to try to paint himself as the moderate. No, I'm not for the extreme of war on drugs, and I'm not for the extreme of legalization. I'm the sensible, rational moderate in the discussion. Check this out.
We shouldn't keep going the way we're going. That's also not the option. I think actually President Santos said it right, that on one extreme you have legalization, on the other you have the old lock 'em up policies. But there's also, you know, there are a lot of other policies in the middle that we can work on in terms of treatment. You know, our good friend Patrick Kennedy and Jim Ramstead fighting for addiction parity to make sure health insurance companies cover addiction like any other health illness. Looking at drug courts, you know, Martin Sheen and Matthew Perry, big fans of drug courts, which essentially leverage the criminal justice system and the healthcare system to
catch that, though. Leverage the criminal justice system. And he brings up Matthew Perry and Martin Sheen, who have recently made very high-profile calls for more drug courts. Of course, both of them having some experience with the law and getting busted with drugs. And while it's a feel-good measure, and a lot of these Hollywood liberals are behind it from the idea of, oh, well, it's treatment, not incarceration. We're going to help people with drug problems. What really happens here is for every one actual person with a drug problem for whom this might help, you have many more whose only problem with drugs is they got caught with it, especially when we're talking about marijuana. Admissions to rehab for marijuana only, 60% of them come from the criminal justice system. Criminal justice referrals, 15% of them are self-referrals, where someone says, yeah, I got a problem with pot, I need to turn myself in here. Then the government uses those numbers to say, ah, look at all the people that are enrolling in rehab. Why, there's a big drug problem. We need more drug courts. And it's a self-fulfilling cycle. The drug courts catch people who don't have a drug problem, get them to not do drugs, and then claim success in rehabilitating addicts when these people weren't addicts in the first place. They were merely people who got caught smoking some weed.
And make judges sort of intervene on an addict's life.
Okay.
You know, that's a way to
let
do
me
it.
Try
that.
Let's Matthews hear the other side. Ethan with the other side. It seems to me, Ethan Nadelman, that we have kids making careers now starting when they're eight.
By the way, let's just note that in this clip, we are a minute 37 into the clip without talking to the other side yet. Ethan hasn't had a chance to talk. Basically, Kevin's gotten 90 seconds of airtime uninterrupted.
As drug salesmen on the streets. That's their great business plan, to go out there and sell drugs in their neighborhoods. What would legalization do to that market, the illegal market?
Well, it would do the same thing that ending alcohol prohibition did to that market. I mean, let's face it, what you're seeing, Chris, in Mexico, Central America, other parts of Colombia and the region, it's like Chicago during the days of Al Capone and prohibition times 50. I mean, the crime, the violence, the empowerment of organized crime, the black markets, these are all the consequences of a failed prohibitionist policy. The presidents down there are smart enough to know not to say legalize everything. Building census, an emerging critical mass that we need to put all options on the table, including the decriminalization of drug possession, including legal regulation of drug markets, and everything as well. That's
how can you?
New.
Let me try.
President Obama said he's against legalization. Okay. Every president has said that.
Well, let me try the tricky question. You can 10 people can have a glass of wine, and maybe 1 in 10 or 1 in 100 would become quickly addicted to alcohol. But I'm told that if you try crack cocaine, let me go to Kevin on this. If you try crack cocaine once, you're liable to be addicted.
Well, obviously, it depends on the person. I mean, we also don't want to overstate the case, but
sorry, I got to cut off Chris Matthews on that because that is absolutely not true. The lifetime addiction rate for cocaine, even use of crack cocaine among first-time users, is around 23%. So about 1 in 4 people who try crack cocaine may end up with what NIDA calls a dependence problem on crack cocaine. Meanwhile, the first-time use addiction rate for people that try tobacco is 35%. You're much more likely to get addicted to cigarettes. 1 out of 3 people who tries a smoke gets addicted to that compared to 1 out of 4 people that tries cocaine. And in the case of marijuana, it's about 1 out of 11. The addiction rate, the dependence rate on marijuana is about 9%, equal to that, according to NIDA again, as caffeine. You're about as likely to get dependent on marijuana as you are to get dependent on Starbucks. And the withdrawal from that dependence is about the same level as trying to withdraw from coffee. You might get some headaches, some irritability, have a little trouble sleeping, but by God, you're not going to go into the delirium tremens like an alcoholic or you have a complete body shutdown like a heroin addict trying to kick one of those drugs. So it's once again disingenuous when they bring up the, oh, you'll always get addicted to crack story. Let's see how Kevin handles this.
There's a high addiction rate with crack or methamphetamine. I mean, heroin, 1 in 4 users become addicted, and the rest, you know, still become a drain in our life, even if they aren't, you know, technically addicted. So,
yeah, got to give them that too as well. It's not 1 in 3 people that use heroin that get addicted. Again, heroin dependence rates are around the same 25-23% rate that we find for the people that use cocaine. Cocaine and heroin, just about the same addiction rate. Tobacco beats them by a mile. Oh, and by the way, alcohol addiction rate is about 15%.
The idea that we're going to wipe out these cartels just if we legalize tomorrow, you know, alcohol prohibition was over a 13-year period, and they were wiped out, that underground market for that. Illegal drugs, over 100 years, they're operating on a host of other problems like guns and human trafficking and piracy. Mm. The idea that we're going to wipe them out is ludicrous. We can have a small...
Well, what are we going to do then? Just allow them to be? He seems to say that alcohol was only prohibited for 13 years, so it was a lot easier to root out that corruption and organized crime, whereas the drug war, you know, these drug cartels been doing it for 100 years. They're much more powerful and they have much more money and they're causing much more mayhem. That's your defense? Really? That's your defense as well? They're too big to fail? Is that what it is? They're too big to fail? Too big to take down? We can't possibly approach these guys and try to take them out here? I just don't understand this line of reasoning. And when we come back in hour two, we're going to go on to the second half of this this presentation by Kevin Sabet and Ethan Nadelman on the Chris Matthews Hardball program. When we come back, we're going to turn over to Todd's Toker Topics. He's going to tell us about, what was it again? Product
quality.
Product quality. Thank you. Right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha, ya no puede caminar.
You're listening to
porque
Normal Show
tiene,
Live.
Porque le falta marihuana que fumar.
You chimpin'.
The voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Here at Normal Show Live, we spend all week taking a look at the tragedy of American marijuana prohibition. But it's important to take a break and remember that we are a vibrant, diverse, and oftentimes hilarious community of people. So our friend, comedian Todd Armstrong, joins us to poke fun at one of Todd's toker topics.
All right, Level 1 Tuesday comes around. We get our laugh hat on. Is that your laugh hat?
It's my I'm slightly balding, so let's not avoid it in these bright-ass lights. Laugh hat, that's correct.
You've uncovered my secret to hats.
That's what it is. It's the combination of Jufro when my hair's too long, and then it's really bald-looking when it's under these lights. So.
All right, so the toker topic today, take it away, Todd.
We'll start off with quality product. This is a women's dollar store hat about 7 years ago. This was what provides world trade. I'd like to talk about quality product because we have a lot of things going on in the news that's going on. And I always get brought back to President Obama's quote of, sunshine is the best disinfectant. And it doesn't really seem to apply because we need jobs and we need violence at the border to stop. So why don't we just regulate pot and legalize it so we can have quality of product? The reason we have quality product that we have is capitalism. A lot of people hate it, but that's what it is. It's the reason we have all these awesome things that we get to choose from in the Portland area, McDonald's for a hamburger to Killer Burger for a hamburger. Now, everyone has their local reference, but at McDonald's, every bite you take, you question how many cows you're actually biting into. Or I should say, how many thousand cows you're biting into. Now, you know what you paid for. You spent a dollar. Now, my favorite place to go is Killer Burger. You spend a couple extra bucks, you get what you get because of quality of product. Now, Russ was talking about the Green Rush, where we have a lot of ass clowns coming into the scene just trying to make a quick butt. They're legalized drug dealers in that sense, and they can just ship a pretty decent product at a high cost, and that's not fair. We need to focus on the quality of product. We need to legalize pot so we can have it like jobs, like we have these horribly annoying, pretentious coffee testers and tasters. Wouldn't you really want to walk into a hash bar and have those pretentious hipster shit where they stare a hole through you just like you're annoying them as they sniff and just talk past you about the weed? You're not even asking about what variety you want. They just want to show you that indica because they're so up about it. I want that day where a person with a rat tail talks down to me and asks me for $40 a gram. And then I can walk the hell out and go next door and spend whatever I want. But that's capitalism, where I can choose with that business to leave that place. And that's what I want to focus on. If we had allowed this, we could have Zagat reviews of pot places. Zagat reviews of consistent varieties of strains or whatever you like. I know strain is an improper term to some people in the growing community, different varieties or geniuses. But that's what we can get into arguments about with the legalization, where President Obama's down in Colombia talking about a deregulated market. The reason we have money down there is from drugs and prostitutes and his Secret Service prostituting other things. We don't even know what's going on, but without a regulated market, we can look at Vegas. You can pay for a type of prostitute and a price at that. You may not agree with it, but that's what America has, and we can go for the best whores in the world in Vegas or Colombia if you can go there on Air Force One. I think we should work on quality products. Let's have some online reviews and so we can have some consistency. Let's shed some sunlight on the drug policy and probably those hotel rooms in Colombia. Have a nice night, America. Take it easy. I'll see you next Tuesday.
Oh, thank you, Todd, so much. And, of course, we like to find out where people can catch you next in the live comedy world.
I'll be up in Tacoma, Washington next week, Tacoma Comedy Club, and then I'll be in Seattle at Parlor Live the week after that, or 2 weeks after that.
Oh, far out. And website and Twitter and all the stuff.
Yeah, ToddArmstrong.net is going to get built pretty soon. And then, of course, find me on Twitter at ArmToddStrong. And then Facebook is GoobTheKnob.
All right. Thanks so much, Todd. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you so much.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
radical rant.
All right, got a little more video here from that summit of the Americas in Cartagena, Colombia. And the president, President Obama, was there with one of the Latin American leaders, and Chris Matthews from the Hardball Show was interviewing them through a translator and asked very pointed questions about the drug war and the Latin American response to it. Check out this video from MSNBC.
You have a chance to sit next to President Obama now. Do you want to ask him about the ways you think the United States could help your country in the drug war?
Chris, ¿no tiene una pregunta un poco más fácil?
Don't you have a simpler question?
How can we improve North-South relations, generally speaking?
We have the obligation to see if we're doing the best that we can do, or if there are other alternatives that can be much more efficient. On one side, it can be to put all the consumers go to jail. The other extreme is legalization. On the middle ground, we may have more practical policies.
I think it is entirely legitimate to have a conversation about whether the laws in place are ones that are doing more harm than good in certain places. I personally, and my administration's position, is that legalization is not the answer. That, in fact, if you think about how it would end up operating, the capacity of a large-scale drug trade to dominate certain countries if they were allowed to operate legally without any constraint could be just as corrupting, if not more corrupting, than the status quo.
That is a remarkable statement. President Obama just basically said that if we legalize drugs, the legal businesses that would then control the legal production of legal drugs in these Latin American countries would be more corrupting and damaging than the cartels that are currently illegally producing these drugs, killing people, torturing people. If these countries were allowed to produce drugs legally, the companies that produce them, in a legal manner, where they can take people to courts, where they can have the force of law to cover any of their disputes, would be as bad, as corrupting, or worse than illegal drug dealers whose only method of settling disputes is murder, mayhem, torture, and terrorism. That's how reefer mad our own president has become when it comes to this issue of the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. And what's really frustrating about this is that I believe they know it. I believe they know what they're doing. I believe they're in a holding pattern. They're trying to stall. They're trying to keep the status quo as long as they can until they can develop cannabinoid pharmaceuticals and a whole bunch of other things. And of course, there's so many jobs and bureaucracies on the line when it comes to the drug war industrial complex. And not to mention picking Joe Biden, one of the 1980s biggest drug warriors, as your vice president, and picking President Bush's DEA administrator to continue in her job. So we kind of see where this has gone, but they've tried to paper over it. They've tried to whitewash it. You heard Kevin Sabet earlier, and he's a big proponent of trying to talk about this balance. We're so balanced. The war on drugs is an old metaphor, and it doesn't work, and it's an utter failure. And instead, we're going to turn toward treatment and prevention. We're going to help people. We're compassionate about this. So in looking this up, they actually had an infographic that the White House put out. And let me see if I can get this on the desktop for you. This is the Obama budget infographic that they want you to pay attention to here. And let me get it resized so you can see it. But basically, the big red bar there, they're trying to point out how that's the big red bar representing the $10.1 billion of drug control budget that is dedicated to law enforcement, or I'm sorry, to prevention and treatment. So the red bar, prevention and treatment. They're trying to show you there, gee, look how balanced we are. Prevention and treatment is $10.1 billion. Law enforcement incarceration is only $9.4 billion. See the balance? We're spending more on treatment and prevention than we're spending on law enforcement and interdiction. So that's supposedly the balance we have here in our U.S. drug war. But the thing is, and if you are an eagle-eyed observer, you may have noticed that there were two other bars there in the budget that the president and the infographic don't want you to pay attention to. And that's these other ones that are for interdiction and international help, international assistance, okay? And what these represent, interdiction, of course, is the law enforcement chopping down pot plants in the forest, eradicating coca crops in South America, poppy fields in Asia, and intercepting drug shipments, you know, border patrol, coast guard, stuff like that, right? In other words, law enforcement. And another bar that they left out there, and by the way, that the bar for the interdiction there is, what is that, $3.6 billion. And then the bar for international programs, $2.1 billion. The international programs, that's when we send money and weapons and arms and drones and communications equipment and satellite help and all that kind of stuff to places like Mexico and the Merida Initiative and Colombia and Plan Colombia and so forth. Another set of law enforcement priorities, because the money we're giving to those countries is being used for law enforcement, interdiction, and so forth. So if you actually stack the bars and you compare what we're spending on prevention and treatment to what we're spending on total law enforcement and total incarceration, you end up with $15.1 billion for law enforcement and $10.1 billion for incarceration and or for prevention and treatment. In other words, a 3-2 tilt in favor of law enforcement and incarceration. Now, if you take a deep look into the approved 2012 drug war budget, you'll find the administration's tilt toward law enforcement has actually become slightly more pronounced. The total for supply reduction, which is what they call domestic law enforcement, interdiction, and international help, supply reduction, all the law enforcement efforts to bust people making, trafficking, and using drugs, all those law enforcement efforts represented 59.2% of the 2011 budget, went up to 59.7% of the 2012 budget. Now, it's a statistically insignificant bump, but still went slightly up in favor of more law enforcement. Now, to be fair, in 2013, the Obama administration would like to get that down to 58.8%. So why? Why are they trying to put these priorities together? What is the point of their 2012 National Drug Control Strategy? This is a quote from Gil Kerlikowske, the drug czar, from within that document. Their goal is a 15% reduction in the rate of drug use and similar reductions in drug use consequences over the course of 5 years from 2010 to 2015. Okay, so they think that by what they're doing, with a 60% of their resources going toward law enforcement, supply reduction, 60% supply reduction, we're going to reduce drug use by 15%. That's their goal. That's their stated goal since Obama took office. Well, that kind of makes me wonder then why the Obama administration felt they had to change anything that was going on. I took a look at the 2009 National Drug Control Report, the final drug control report from the George W. Bush administration. That administration in 2009, after 8 years of Bush-Cheney drug war, crowed that we have helped reduce teenage drug use by 25% since 2001. So it sounds like President Bush actually accomplished what President Obama is trying to do. He reduced teenage drug use by 25%. Now, in 2002, Bush's supply reduction budget was 54.4% of the overall total budget, and that rose to 65.2% by the time it got to his 2009 budget. In other words, Bush, through his term, had less and less and less and less treatment and prevention as a proportion of the overall federal budget, and drug use declined. So why does President Obama think he needs to flip that around to get drug use to decline? As Bush decreased support for treatment and prevention, quote, and this is from his 2009 report, current use of illicit drugs by youth has declined by 25%, and youth use of drugs such as MDMA, ecstasy, LSD, and methamphetamine has dropped by more than 50%. So you want to know the secret here? The truth is, when drug use patterns rise and fall, they have very little to do with anything that law enforcement or the government is doing. When confronted by escalating drug use numbers, prohibitionists will clamor for more money and enforcement to stop drug use. But when the drug use numbers decline, prohibitionists will clamor for more money and enforcement to keep stopping drug use. Despite claiming to want a discussion of legalization, they just cannot conceive of just trying to stop people from using the drugs in the first place might be wrong, and instead concentrating on just mitigating the harms from the problem users. For them, the use of a drug, even marijuana, is malum in se. It is evil in and of itself, and it must be stopped, preferably while drinking a martini and smoking a cigar. Now, to be fair, the Obama administration has made progress in reducing sentencing disparities, requiring health insurance to cover addiction treatment, and removing roadblocks for people in recovery to gain housing and employment. But as long as he continues to fight this war on marijuana, it's always going to be a troublesome issue for me.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All right, folks, that's all the time we got for Hour 1. For Todd Armstrong, Wiz Khalifa, Ganja John, the NorCal Kid, Brian Blank, Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.